When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to Clash of the Titles, the podcast that sees two movies with something in common go head-to-head to see which one does it better on this week's episode. In the red corner, we're talking about the most successful Australian movie in the history of cinema as modern-day Aussie folk hero, the charming, knife-carrying Michael J. Dundee leaves behind both the outback and his hobby of murdering reptiles to experience the Big Apple from 1986. It's Crocodile Dundee.
He was raised in the land down under, where a man thinks on his feet, speaks with his fists, and lives by his wits. A legendary figure about to encounter a world more treacherous than any he has ever known.
Is this your first trip to New York?
First trip anyway.
While in the blue corner, we're back in New York, but this time we're in the company of Prince Akeem of Zamunda, who has got some right royal reservations about his arranged marriage. Will he find his queen-to-be in NYC? Watch as Eddie Murphy plays 247 different characters in 1988's Coming to America.
Once upon a time, in a faraway kingdom, lived a handsome prince and engaged by royal decree.
Why? Why can't I find my own wife?
We've gone to a great deal of trouble to select for you a very fine wife.
I want a woman that's going to arouse my intellect as well as my loins.
Where will you find such a woman?
In America.
So he traveled across the sea to the land of opportunity.
So what connects these two films and which one does it better? Let's find out. It's Clash of the Titles.
The Kraken.
G'day, Clash Potters. This show normally takes an hour, but today it'll probably take two on account of Vicky being a Sheila. I'm Alex Zane.
I'm Sheila.
I'm Chris Tilley.
How are you both doing?
I feel better now. That was fun. That was a good start. I'm fine. I tell you what I've noticed this week. So let's do some small talk though, because I know Chris hates it, which makes me like it more. So I have noticed this week, the minute the temperature goes up above like 8 degrees, I am a much easier person to live with. Don't you agree?
We've been talking for, let me just count it up here, less than 3 minutes. Am I allowed to wait and see?
Yeah, I suppose. Maybe it's overcast where you are. It's beautiful in Lewisham. Beautiful. Such a good mood.
I didn't expect you to be this chipper after the water tank disaster.
Oh,
it's been
man.
A hell of a week.
It really has. It's just out. The house is just in ruins. It's ludicrous. And also, I had to ring loads of plumbers, and that is not my strong suit. It was not very graceful for anybody.
Now, you know, I always like to look like the smartest person in the room, which is, I constantly fail at, but I give it a shot every time. I'm willing to admit this week, I do not know what a, I want to say soap sponge is.
Are you talking about...
You messaged me a sugar soap. Sorry,
sugar see, soap.
Sugar yeah. soap. Yeah. What is sugar soap?
Sugar soap is a solution that washes filth off your walls and like blue right. tack and dirt and whatever else. So all I did in response to like the whole house actually falling apart, like the chimneys falling down, was I was like, I'll buy some sugar soap and wash a bit of dust off the wall. But then I didn't even do that. So then I bought a sponge because I forgot to buy a sponge. I was like, great, I've done something. And then just sat back and just watched everything just pile up around me and turn to shit. But I've bought the sugar soap. That's the important thing. I am taking right. back control.
And then so your message is accurate because I haven't got mine yet. I've ordered it. And does it really... Does it really make you feel like a god? Because that's what your message says. Sort of like... This sort of omnipotence.
Yeah, because it's not washing up liquid. No. And it's not just water. No, it's sugar soap. It's different.
Right. Looking for. I literally can't wait for it to arrive. I've never had any before. Sugar soap. Chris, how are you?
Yeah, good. Just checking my emails, you know. Getting shit done.
Right. Cool. Let's crack on then. Right, this week's clash. Crocodile Dundee versus Coming to America, or as we're calling it, New York, New York. These were Victoria's choices. Why?
Can I throw that over to my boss and your boss, Chris Tilley? No, I'm kidding. let's just go to New York. Also, the real answer is Coming to America is available on Amazon Prime on the 5th of March. So Chris thought it would be a good idea to revisit these films. However, because he loves an anniversary, doesn't he? But
he does.
I have wanted to talk about Crocodile Dundee since we started this podcast because it's one of those, you know, I was talking about my granddad had like 7 VHS tapes and so we just watched those all the time. So Crocodile Dundee was in that mix, so I've seen it a lot.
Can I ask Vicky what else is on that list so that we know for future reference?
Home Alone.
Excellent.
I feel we're reaching saturation on this list now. This is about the 7th time you've used this story.
We are reaching the end. Crocodile Dundee, Home Alone, The Golden Child, Inner Space, and then, God, I'm struggling to remember the others, but I'll let you know.
Oh, we're doing well then.
Yeah.
Although I'm sure they'll come up. It sounds like your 7 videos are pretty much the essence of this show. right then, the clue you gave on last week's show, Victoria, was...
I can't remember. Sorry. She's professional.
Something about...
It?
Buying love.
If you can find love there, you can find it anywhere.
No, if you can impress a girl here, you can impress a girl anywhere. Thanks, computer. Sorry.
Okay, then Chris followed that up on Twitter with...
I'm just checking.
Oh, here we go.
Both films are fish out of water stories, apart from when our hero is in the bath.
Right. Now, the mention of fish and water was taken quite literally. Guesses on Twitter, we are at ClashPod. Also on Instagram, at ClashPod. Mark Mead, Jimmy, Gary Bailey, Johnny Tightlips, Anthony M. Rose, Stackhouse and Gemma Page all went for Splash versus The Shape of Water. The only right answer this week came from Paul Logue, who said, obviously, Crocodile Dundee versus Coming to America. You have our respect, Paul. Very quick mention for my favourite guest this week, which came in from There's Something About Jamie. I'm assuming it's a joke, in which case it's very funny. It might not be. Aquaman versus Waterworld.
Excellent.
But do you not think Waterworld should go with Fury Road,
God,
Chris?
God, no. Right, fish boys.
Connections then. What have we got?
Fish out of water stories?
Fish out of water stories. I've got, hey, women, do you want a job? You should work for your dad.
Yep. Dickhead boyfriends.
Yeah, rich boyfriends movies. Are the fucking worst.
Proper dickheads.
The subway climax.
Yep. Ooh.
Men in drag.
Rich dads showing off about their houses.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Keeps the rain off our heads.
V, what's the actual connection?
It's, let's hear it for New York, concrete jungle where dreams are made of, knives and knockoff fast food restaurants. There you go.
That's lovely.
Thanks.
That's our second use of New York-based lyrics in the show to define the connection.
Yeah.
Right. Chris has taken us on a trip round NYC on Thursday, but I'll be your guide today as we decide if there's more to this film than the line, "That's not a knife, this is a knife." Let me take you on a journey. After hearing about a man having his leg bitten off by a crocodile in the Australian outback, a reporter called Sue, who works for a newspaper based in New York, decides this is the story for her readers, who again are in New York. Upon arriving in the outback, it turns out the story was a lie. Weirdly, discovering this somehow doesn't deter our intrepid reporter, who, having never seen Wolf Creek, ventures into the outback anyway with a man she's just met. Thankfully, Mick Crocodile Dundee is a right old charmer who has never met a reptile he didn't want to kill. And as he murders his way through a smorgasbord of Australia's wildlife, Sue can't help but fall for him. She then drags McMick back to New York so he can hang out with her boyfriend, Richard. At which point you're left wondering who she's going to end up with. Or at least we would if Richard wasn't such a massive tool. He somehow makes Mick, a man who literally lives in the desert punching snakes for fun, looks like the best guy on the planet. The end. Ladies and gentlemen, for your consideration, A Crocodile Dundee. Histories with this movie. I shall be on and off attempting an Australian accent throughout this episode of the show.
Oh, great.
Get used to it. Oh, yeah.
Shouldn't you issue an apology first?
This show will be incredibly offensive to many Australians.
Many? Hello. So confident. Many. All.
Hello to our friends down under. We're going to be talking about your folk hero, Mick Crocodile Dundee.
I'll be honest, I think I know Vicky's history with this film.
Yes, I think you do. Yeah.
Let's do yours, Chris.
Well, I just remember Paul Hogan seemed to be everywhere when I was a kid, when we were kids. He seemed to be, he was not only on all the talk shows, he was also in all the adverts in between. So it felt like he was ever present. And my memory of this film is there just being a wall of Crocodile Dundee videos in the local video store. I don't think I've ever seen that many copies of one film ever stocked in my local video store, apart from maybe Back to the Future, because this was obviously such a huge movie that they, I guess they decided would appeal to absolutely everyone. I just remember sort of 40 copies of it taking up the wall in there. So yeah, I watched it when I was a kid and probably got about 75% of the jokes. It's a weird film for a kid to watch in some moments, but
you're using jokes in a very generous sense there. Mm. A very generous sense. First time I like you saw it on the video shelf by my local video store, Barker's Video on Street Lane in Leeds. Once again, massive respect to my hometown for having a road called Street Lane. I rented it with a friend of mine. So we were allowed, it was the first VHS I ever rented. We were allowed one each. I picked the best movie in the Alien franchise, Aliens, and he picked Crocodile Dundee. And so we watched them back to back. And then my mum got a right telling off from his mum for letting him watch an 18-rated movie because he couldn't sleep, the baby. But all I remember about Crocodile Dundee was looking at the cover going, cool, it's going to be like Indiana Jones, and then it not being like Indiana Jones.
That happened to me with Blade Runner when I thought it was a new Star Wars film. And it was not.
Dear.
It was definitely not a new Star Wars film. And five-year-old me was very scared and confused.
Because you don't like a bit of horror when you were a kid. How did you react when Tyrell got his eyes pushed into his skull?
I mean, the whole thing was very upsetting. Why is Han Solo acting like this?
Right, let's do a little bit of trivia. You've already touched on this, Chris. I guess we should start with Paul Hogan, or Hogues. I couldn't find out whether that was a nickname he'd been given or he'd given himself, but I've given him the benefit of the doubt that he was given it.
It's definitely Although what I everyone find... in Australia calls him, though, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's his thing. It's his brand. Hogues. I did find an interview where he refers to himself in the third person. So I'm not actually convinced he didn't give himself his own nickname, but you never know. He was a construction worker on the Sydney Harbour Bridge whose big break came when he was 30 years old and he went on a talent show in America called New Faces, which was famous for its mean judges. So this is sort of the 70s he does this. He claimed he was going to be a tap dancing knife thrower to get on the show, comes on in tap shoes and knives, and then just proceeds to take the piss out of the judges for 5 minutes and then chucks the knives on the floor and does a tap step. And people fucking loved it. They were like, this is great. He was invited back. And that's how he gets his big break. You know, flash forward a few years, got his own TV show, The Paul Hogan Show, which apparently was on here in the UK on Channel 4, but I do not remember. It's too young. Chris?
No, I don't remember it if it was on here, but I did watch a bunch of clips in preparation for this. And I would say the English companion show would be Benny Hill. It seemed very similar for humour in terms right. of sort of speeded up, slowed down. Lots of jokes about Sheilas with big boobs, basically.
Oh, well, as you said as well, we got alongside his show the Foster's Lager commercials, the Winfield cigarettes commercials, and he was also the face of Australian tourism. But Crocodile Dundee is the movie that basically turned him into the actual face of an entire nation for, what, like 30 years? I mean, I genuinely think if you ask people, if you went quickly, on the spot, name the most famous Australian, I'd say a 70% chance Crocodile Dundee would come up. Like, he is like this. He sort of transcended film to become the mascot of the country, right?
Yeah, and in terms of those tourism board ads, that was all part of a plan that he and his producing buddy had to launch him in America, because I think they even agreed to not get paid that much as long as extra ads were put on during prime time in the States so they could introduce him as a character, as a man, in the build up to them making Crocodile Dundee and trying to, you know, have a hit in America. So it was all very pre-planned and it worked.
Yeah, after this movie, US interest in holidaying in Australia went through the roof. But where there's a dispute is whether there was a real life inspiration for this character, Crocodile Dundee, because Paul Hogan has said outright that there isn't, and that he came up with the idea on his first trip to New York. He said, I felt like an alien from another planet. There's a myth that there's a real Crocodile Dundee, but there isn't. A lot of people, however, believe it's based on this guy, this real-life bushman called Rod Ansell, who became famous in Australia in the early 80s after he got trapped on an island at the mouth of a crocodile-infested river in the outback and basically survived on his wits. And he came on Parkinson in the UK, and he tells this story on Parkinson about how that the BBC have put him up in a 5-star hotel, but he prefers to sleep on the floor in his sleeping bag. And so people are like, okay, this is before Crocodile Dundee. So that convinces a lot of people that Crocodile Dundee is based on him. It convinces this Rod Ansell guy that it's based on him. He tries to get money from the filmmakers unsuccessfully, and then his story kind of ends pretty tragically. I say kind of, it does. He got into drugs and depression and eventually died in a shootout with police in 1999 after killing an officer. In 2001, Paul Hogan said about this, the media in Australia determined that he was the one I had based the character on. It didn't matter that I had never met him or talked to him. He killed a cop. I thought, how much proof do you want that he is not the real Crocodile Dundee? So as late as 2001, Mr. Paul Hogan is still going, it's not based on him. Back to the movie then. As Chris said, Paul Hogan basically, these are his words, wanted to make a massively accessible mainstream movie that would play well around the world, but mainly in America. He writes the script with his writers from his TV show, gets a budget of $7 million together from about 1,400 different investors, including in excess's Michael Hutchins.
It's a little bit like George Miller, because George Miller and Paul Hogan both wanted money from the Australian film industry, but the body didn't want to fund a film like Mad Max or like Crocodile Dundee. They only wanted to fund art house movies. And so, a bit like Miller, but more so, he raised the funds himself. So it's interesting that Australia's two biggest exports had to be self-funded because the AFI had no interest in them.
Yeah, and the Australian Actors Union, I forget what it's called, they were even like, you can't have Linda Kozlovsky playing Sue in this. It has to be an Australian actress. We have to support our own talent here. So it took a lot of persuasion to get an American actress to play a New Yorker in an Australian film. Hogan said he expected it would make millions of dollars around the world and that on planning for it to be Australia's first proper movie. I don't think we've had one yet. Not a real general public successful entertaining movie. He wasn't wrong. Here's a stat attack for you. Second biggest film of 1986 in the world. Just $20 million less than Top Gun and over $100 million more than the number three movie, which was Aliens. Most successful Australian film in history, taking the title from Mad Max 2. Considered responsible for launching a US love affair with Australia, turned Paul Hogan into the country's most famous face around the world. Debuted on Christmas Day 1989 on UK TV on BBC One with an audience of 21.8 million, remains the most watched film ever shown on the BBC in the wow. history of the channel. Yeah, it's still to date the fifth most watched film in UK history. It's just the rest were on ITV. Does anyone, just for fun, does anyone have a guess at the other movies that make up the other four, the four ahead of it and the most watched movies on in UK history?
E.T.?
Ooh.
No, one, two, three of them are Bond movies.
Oh, really?
Live and Let Die is the most watched, followed by Jaws, The Spy Who Loved Me and Diamonds Are Forever. Right, that's pretty much it. The only thing is a little bit of controversy from Australians themselves who do not like the fact that Crocodile Dundee has perpetuated this, like, it's a ochre image, which is kind of like an Aussie redneck, where he's sort of like, they don't like the fact that people still think of all Aussies being like Crocodile Dundee and that it's not a very cultured place. One critic describes it as it permanently created an image of beer-swilling, happy-go-lucky folk barbecuing steak at the beach. I've never been to Australia. That sounds fucking great. What are you moaning about? What is wrong with you, Australian man? I mean, have you ever been to a barbecue in the UK? You are welcome to the image of people standing on a slab of concrete patio huddled under an awning to avoid the rain. Well, if you want that...
We'll do a swap, yeah.
Moaning. He married Linda Kozlovsky after filming and she'd appear with him in all the Crocodile Dundee films and not a lot else apart from John Carpenter's The Village of the Damned and comedy movie Pass the Ammo alongside Tim Curry. And that completes this week's obligatory Tim Curry reference.
I will say I saw him being interviewed about his relationship with her because obviously he was with his wife, his first wife, when he met Linda Kozlovsky, left his first wife for her. And he said that, and he broke up with Linda Kozlowski about 5-10 years ago. And he said that he's a very good husband for about 20 years, but then he stopped. Then he stops being a good husband. So make of that what you will.
I mean, that's not bad. I'd take those odds. 20 years. If you've got 20 years in you as a good husband, I'll take that.
Because he married young. He married at 19 and he had three sons by the time he was 22. So he got in a lot of life before he found this second career as an actor.
Yeah, how old is he in this movie? He's 46. 46 in Crocodile Dundee. I thought he was older, I'll be honest.
My God. He looks very, very... Yeah, hard times. He doesn't look 5'46 to me.
It's sun damage. Yeah. I mean, it's all very well going, happy-go-lucky, beach-living folk.
I disagree. I think it's because he's made of leather.
Are you suggesting that waistcoat he wears isn't actually a waistcoat at all? It's sort of a flap of skin. That's an extra flap of skin.
He's made of wire and leather, that man.
Oh, right then. We first meet Sue. What a penthouse apartment she has looking over Sydney Harbour. There's a Sydney Opera House in the background. This is like the most expensive property. At which point you're like, wow, she is a reporter. Mm. How does she afford that? And it's very clever because the movie is seeding the fact that she's not really a reporter. I mean, she has a she works for her dad's paper, but we don't know that at the moment. So we're like, oh, bloody hell, she's got a great bloody good reporter, isn't she? How do you feel about that reveal later on, Victoria? Do you want to wait until we get to it? Because it basically what it does is take a character that has been shown to be professional, successful, yeah. independent, yeah. and rip all that from under her in one unnecessary relationship.
Yeah, I'd forgotten about it, and I felt the same as you. I saw the apartment, and then also when she gets back to New York, she's in a limo, and then Crocodile Dundee's hotel is amazing, and you're like, whoa, the heady days of print journalism. Like, that doesn't happen anymore. And then it's like, oh, no, it's just your dad paid for it. Okay. It's a bit of a shame. I don't know. It didn't bother me that much, but it's a bit of a shame.
She works for her dad. I think her boyfriend is the editor of the...
The editor.
He's the editor. Yeah. And she sleeps with her subject that she's going to interview.
Yeah.
I think it sort of undermines this independent, powerful woman at every turn, really, I think this film does.
Oh, it does, yeah. I mean, we'll get into it. There's a bit where, she, you know, she has a strop with Mick. And she's like, I'm going to go off for a walk by myself. And because I'd forgotten, I haven't seen this film for 30 years, although I have seen it like dozens of times. But I thought she had this subplot where she's like, I might live in New York, but actually I used to climb mountains and do this and do whatever. And she could like make this work, but she just can't. Like, she just that, has to be rescued almost immediately.
That'd be good. That would be good. That's a really good idea. If she was actually quite good at it, she's not. We find that out very quickly. But she's not really very good at reporting. I mean, so she goes off to the Northern Territory. And because it's the outback, for some reason, she just dresses up like a World War One flying ace. like the ones that used to fly those biplanes. Like she literally goes, I'm going to go take down the Red Baron. Where's my scarf and my leather gloves? Get me in my biplane. And it's just... the outback is, I've heard it's backwards. Yeah, you're not actually time traveling. So she arrives at Walkabout Creek. And we meet Wally. Now, do not be fooled by Wally's doddery old man act. Wally is a snake and a liar. he's all like, oh, charming. Oh, it's lovely. Oh, yeah. He's the one who brought her up here with the fake story about the crocodile attack. So he's a snake, a liar, and a time waster. But Sue cannot see that. Because of all the eyeliner she's wearing in the outback, she can't see. She can't see the truth right in front of her. Did you like Wally? I mean, he's a fraud. He is a fraudulent man.
I did like him. Yeah. I think just because I felt a lot of affection towards him when I was 9, and sort of carried that over. And you can't be mad at a man who wears knee-high socks and shorts, can you?
He gets to the bar and the waitress in the bar even calls him out. She says in front of Sue, it's like, oh, that story, that lie that Wally keeps telling. And Sue goes, H-h-h-h-h-h-h-h. It's like, she's just told you that there's this biting of the leg. This is a lie. And Sue, oblivious. Then Mick comes in. Knife first, which is what we learn about Mick. Mick approaches every situation knife first. He comes into the bar pretending he's wrestling a dead crocodile. This is literally the funniest thing anyone has seen in this bar ever. It's fucking hilarious. People are falling about themselves. This is also one of the rare cases in the film where an animal starts off the scene dead. Most animals in this film start the scene alive, and then by the end of the scene involving Mick, they are dead. But this one starts dead, so it's all right. Mick wrestling the croc works on Sue. She likey. He's 50, she's 30. What age gap? 20 years, schmenty years. She's into him. So much so that she forgives him for having both legs. Yeah. That's cool. Yeah, I only flew across the continent because you said you'd lost a leg in a crocodile attack. At this point, she apparently sees no problem editorially for the paper that the story has changed from a man losing his leg and crawling to safety to a man getting a nasty scratch and walking to safety. She's like, cool, there's still a story here. Yeah. This is what New York is gagging for. This is what they need. I can see the headline that man... not savaged by crocodile. Pulitzer, here I come. But genuinely, this scene is like, this is like robot romance. This is a mechanical scene. I don't mind it, but it just loads up fucking everything. It's like big entrance from the male love interest, the lingering look, the asking her to dance, the punching out the mouthy guy, the kissing his mate on the mouth. Mick is a lover, a fighter, a romantic. Girls want him, guys want to be him. It's like they put it all in one single scene. So we're like, right, I get it. We like this guy, despite the fact he is an illegal crocodile poacher who skins them to sell. That is totally glossed over in this movie. I spent the first half trying to work out if he actually was a crocodile poacher, or it was like it was just going to turn around. He's like, actually, I'll save the crocodiles from the poachers, which is what it would be now and what it kind of should have been then, but it's not. He's like, he genuinely illegally, it's a crime anyway. Forget the ethics. It is a crime. He illegally kills and skins crocodiles and sells their skins to make a living. That is a romantic lead on the male side of this film. Because later, what's the fucking fuck?
But he saves the kangaroos from the poachers. So,
yeah.
Is he a poacher then?
Sorry, don't get me wrong. Mick loves a mammal. He's fine with mammals, but you put a reptile. I'll go through it, Chris. I will prove this point.
Fine.
We will go through each reptile that appears on screen dead, normally within 5 seconds. He does not fuck around. Like, and often, as we're just about to find out, he can be effusing about the wonder of nature and then halfway through that speech, murder an animal. He's a fucking law unto himself. Well, we'll get to it. In 2001... an interview for Crocodile Dundee in LA, which I will never watch, Paul Hogan said about the crocodile killing, yeah, he's not a crocodile killer anymore in Crocodile Dundee in LA. He used to kill crocodiles for the skin, but the responsibility of having a child has made him a bit more politically correct. Not his own choice. Just because he had a kid, he stops murdering reptiles. That's old fun-loving Mick Dundee. Right, we get to see how Mick is the best bushman, setting up loads of little bits that we'll see used later in the film for no reason. He puts a buffalo to sleep.
Yeah, but it's ridiculous because the buffalo is in the way and he's like, I'll sort this out. And so he goes up to it and he's like, easy girl, or whatever he does. But then it sits down. So it's like, how's that solve the problem? Before it was stood up and in the way. Now it's sat down and in the way. But the problem still exists, doesn't it, Mick?
Yeah, but he's proved he can make things sit down.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. I'm just pleased an animal makes it out alive. But at this point, I didn't know he loves mammals.
I used to try and subdue my brother like that, but it didn't work. I did. I'd say stand there and I'd make that noise and do that thing with my hands, but it never worked. I was an idiot.
Did you do this in public? Could other people see you doing this? No. Oh, right. So, just for point of reference, this is how they actually got the buffalo to do that, because buffalo, that wasn't a trained buffalo. How is this for Australian? A vet was called to set, called Kel Small, and was told they wanted the buffalo to lay down. Kel Small says, before I injected him with the muscle relaxant, the director asked me what was going to happen. I replied that I'd not tried this before and I wasn't sure, but we'd soon find out.
Oh my God.
If that's not enough, Kel was paid a carton of Fosters for his services.
No,
I kid you not.
Oh my God. What? The man's been ripped off. Ridiculous. That's all I could concentrate on in the bar scene. I was just like, oh, Fosters, that's the worst. Yuck.
Yeah, I wish Castlemaine 4X had disappeared by the time I was old enough to illegally get into bars and pubs. Do you remember Castlemaine 4X?
I do.
That was the one that had that great advert. Oh, I see the pub from here. That was a great advert because I can still remember it.
Mm? Yeah.
The outback guy falls down the ravine but lands in a tree. And yeah, anyway. Sue and Mick, Wandering Around the Outback was filmed in for the Northern Territory of Australia, Kakadu National Park, Northwest Territory. In 2018, one of Australia's top advertising executives, only a couple of years ago, called it still the best advert for Australian tourism in the country's history. This movie, like, basically, I kind of agree. Like,
yeah.
When I first saw it, I think I thought the Australian Outback, it was like the surface of Mars, and it's not. Like, you forget that the nearer parts to the equator, the north of Australia, it is beautiful.
Mm. Yeah, I've been to Kakadu, actually. I didn't realise it was shot there. And obviously it is stunning. But yeah, I think, you know, it wasn't normal in the, you know, before the 80s to go to Australia on holiday. You know, that wasn't something that people did because it was so far away. So yeah, you're right. It definitely makes... It's the first big movie to make the most of that incredible landscape. And it looks so beautiful and so exotic. That is definitely a part of the film's success, this first half of the movie where you're seeing such an alien, stunning country.
I think it's great. I think she's very tolerant of Mick in this first hour because he sort of goes from being quite a charmer in the bar to being thoroughly pissed off with her existence on this tour, which is kind of weird. I mean, I get it. It's sort of like, you know, you shouldn't be out here. In fact, he says as much. It's how I introduced Victoria onto this week's episode. About an hour, he goes about an hour to the river, but you being a Sheila, it'll probably take two. She's so tolerant. She just goes, oh, I'll just do my best. It's like fucking... What? The guy's calling you out.
But you're forgetting your shit. You're forgetting, Alex, she's a woman and a reporter, which makes her the biggest busybody in the world.
Yeah. When he says that to her, she just goes, oh, I know. She's like, God, oh, I fancy you so much.
It's funny because that's an edit for the US version, busybody. In the original Australian version, it goes...
They call her a cunt.
Vicky!
Sorry.
Can you imagine? You're a woman and a reporter, which actually makes you the biggest cunt in the world.
That's enough. Enough with that word. Enough. It's a family show. Sorry. Alex, what was the actual word used?
The actual word was, it's an Australian word for busybody, sticky beak. You're actually, you're being a woman and a reporter, you're actually the biggest sticky beak in the world.
Yeah, because the version that's on TV here, the one that I watch is 98 minutes long, but the Australian is 104 minutes. So do you know what's in those extra 6 minutes, Alex? Because I thought that would be your job, not mine.
Yeah, I do. I'm happy to oblige. Well, there's a lot more character building in the Aussie version, but a lot of the character building early on in the film is done using Australian dialogue, words, slang, jokes that are specific entirely to Australia.
Yeah, so I guess I totally get why they did that with America, but because of us growing up watching all these Australian soaps, I was pretty shocked that the version that was on TV in the UK is this international version rather than the Aussie one.
Yeah, and there's that weird dub later on in New York where the pimp clearly goes, are you gonna fuck?
Yeah.
Not Australian, he's American, and it says he's screw.
Yeah.
And that's an edit that we'll never be able to, like, because we, even now, if you buy it here, it is the US version we are being given here, and it's only the original Australian version that has fuck in it. Yep. It's really strange, actually. If you go on YouTube, you can watch the very start of this movie, the opening titles of the US version next to the Aussie version, and the comparison, it's like they've just made really strange editorial decisions on the US version, in terms of even where the title of the film comes up. Can also, on the Australian version, the title of the film hits on this big sort of swish of music, and you're like, that's where it should hit. They've just moved it. on the US version, it just sort of randomly appears, like, regardless of the score. It's just like, bleh, there it is. And also, I love the fact they put inverted commas around crocodile on the US version.
Yes.
Just because, like, it's like, he's not actually a crocodile, or there's no, it's, he's just a man called Crocodile Dundee. Basically, this is an alligator. This is not a monster movie. Come and see this movie.
Well, I saw a very early screening of Wolf Creek, and I knew nothing about it. And I was kind of scratching my head at the end, waiting for the wolves to show up. So I could see how that could happen.
You are also a man who tried to make his brother fall asleep after watching this movie. So dubious advice. We get... But Crocodile Dundee does a proper good rip-off of the Quint Indianapolis speech in this movie when he's explaining how a croc kills you. He goes, see, a croc will grab you, take you down under the water and roll you over and over till you stop kicking. Then he'll take you away to his meat safe somewhere, a rock, a ledge, a log down there under the water, and jam you under it, tenderize you, make you good eating. I'm like... wow, totally at odds with the rest of the film, but a great Quint ripoff speech. Well done.
It is good, and it scared me when I think of this as a family film, so, which is why I was allowed to watch it on repeat. But that was a good scare for like a 9-year-old, because it's something I didn't know. I just thought they bit you and you bled to death, and it's really terrifying and really dark. So I think it's a good speech.
Mm. Yeah, it even ends with the like, he goes, anyway, he wasn't happy with the grip he had on me, so he let go to get a better one, and I talked him out of it, which is, it's pretty much like, I'll never put on a life jacket again. I'm like, oh, it's the same speech. Anyway, we find out that Sue has an ex.
It's so weird. The way...
Can you explain? I don't understand what the essence of what is trying to be said here in this. I'll just tell, just in case people can't remember the scene, I'll read out what's said and you explain to me what the scene is trying to tell us.
Sure.
So she was married to the original rebel. You name it. He marched.
Mm-hmm.
He marched for anti-nuke, women's lib, save the whales. He's probably marching right now for the gay Nazis or something.
Yeah.
To which Mick goes, sounds like a prize rat bag.
Yep.
Well, I don't understand what is happening. What
is so weird. I've watched the scene a couple of times. So I was like, well, this is the scene where she's like, oh, I've got a past as well. So, and that's great. And what we'll do with the scene is we'll use your past, Sue, to contrast so vividly with Crocodile Dundee to show the journey you're going to make in order to fall in love with him. So Crocodile Dundee is meant to be untouched by the whole world, but especially by the political world, because out here, who would care, you know, all of that. So what they've done is go, oh, okay, well, let's make her ex-husband something to do with politics. What can we do? What can we do? What can we do? Oh, it could be a protester. And you think, oh, well, there's something else staring you in the face there, I think, if I'm being honest. And then all the things that he's marching for, they're great things. And then she's like, oh, he's probably marching for gay Nazis. He's like, where did, what? That comes out of nowhere.
Yeah, that's very odd choice.
So when Mick goes, it sounds like a prize rat bag, is he replying to the fact that he marched for Save the Whales and Women's Lib? And he's like, that sounds like a waste of time. What a ratbag. He should have been spending it with his Sheila.
Yeah.
Or is he reacting to her lie? Does he hear her go, he's probably marching for the gay Nazis now. And he goes, sounds like a prize ratbag. In which case, Mick is right, but he's reacting to a lie she's just made up. In which case, she shouldn't be fucking lying.
Yeah, I think she's saying he was like a bit of a rent, you know, you could rent his morality. He had no moral centre, so if you'll stand for, what is it? Help me out. If you don't stand for anything, you'll fall. Don't stand for something, you'll fall for anything. That's it, sorry. So he's got no solid moral footing, and that's the opposite to Crocodile Dundee, because he's got quite a binary moral outlook. There you go. That's what the scene's doing.
Yeah. It doesn't do it very well, though.
No.
Very confusing.
Agreed.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay, good. Mick then starts effusing about nature and the way the Aborigines view the land, and it's kind of beautiful, actually. He says, Aborigines, like all God's creatures, just want the right to roam across the earth and be left in peace. And as he's saying this, he breaks a snake's neck. So... So it's just another very confusing message from this film.
Yeah, but there is, you can fetishize nature as well, because you have to survive in nature and he has to survive in nature. I would say open camping in that is a bad idea, because then you don't have to break a snake in half, because you'd be in a tent and it would be fine. And then the snake can be left in peace and you can be left in peace. But you can't over romanticize nature in that setting, because if you do, it will kill you. So there's a midway point, which I think he's meant to represent.
Right. Put it in a box or a bag, maybe.
But it'll come back and get you.
No, yeah, but if you put it in a box till morning and then release it as you're leaving, I don't think a snake is going to trail you. I don't think
you don't
it
has. So.
I mean, it's not in the film. I spent the night in a box and I'm not fucking happy about it. So wherever you go, I will find you and I will kill you.
Yeah, that's what they do.
That would have, to potentially, because the second half of this movie lacks, what does it lack? Oh, any drama of any kind. So it would have benefited from a snake stalking Mick secretly around New York.
I agree. I
think there would have been, what was the word, jeopardy of any kind. So we're getting to New York right after this break.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
This week at Sukarnov.
On Clash of the Titles, things got a little awkward when Alex, Vicky and Chris discussed the Incredible Hulk going to the hairdressers.
Have you never had a haircut and gone, that is not what I asked for?
I can't remember what it's like to go to the hairdressers.
Oh, God, sorry. That's triggering. Sorry.
That's on me.
Bad move.
Yeah,
bad absolutely. Bit. Yeah, that is on you. Yeah.
Absolutely. I forgot.
Because we haven't seen you for such a long time. We forgot you've got no hair.
I'm still bald.
So. Yeah, it hasn't grown back magically since we last spoke.
And over on Football Ramble Presents, the On the Continent team have been keeping you across all the European knockouts, as well as a possible title race in Ligue 1 as well.
Icardi can be so frustrating because he can be just one of the most impressive finishers. But you know, when he's not quite on it, he's kind of like the David Blaine in football. Like, he spends a lot of time in a box not doing anything.
Find Clash of the Titles and Football Ramble Presents on your favourite podcast player and listen now.
All that and a whole lot more at Sukarnov.
So, yeah, pretty much the whole Outback thing, some dickheads from the city kill a kangaroo, but that scene is played for laughs because the kangaroo's dead, but then Mick uses the corpse of the recently dead kangaroo to hold a gun and scare the dickheads off while a feel-good score plays. Confusing. It's still a dead kangaroo.
Yeah.
Mick's now decided that the Outback is man's country and Sue wouldn't survive 2 minutes on her own without him. So he forces pretty much Sue to go and prove herself by hiking to the next location alone. Don't worry, Mick is not a total monster. He wouldn't let her go off alone. He's going to silently stalk her and then hide in the bush while she starts to undress to fill her water bottle. I don't know why she wanted to undress before she filled it. it's a film in the 80s with a female character in it. So, yeah, she's like, oh, this skirt is a bit tight to bend down in. This loose skirt is constricting me as I fill this water bottle.
And I think she's wearing quite an impractical swimming costume as well, because
you think
I would imagine that you would want to cover as much of your bush when you're in the bush.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I couldn't believe she was wearing a skirt. I'd be there in like iron boots. Like, you can't. There's just no way.
Well, yeah, I mean, you'd have napalmed all the wildlife before you even set foot in the
They are vindictive, and if you don't, they will come back and get you.
Yeah, I'm not. Everyone, I'm not fetishizing nature. I'm bombing it.
Yeah, I'm cutting out the middleman and all that bollocks, and let's just clear the area before I arrive, because I would like to go camping but without a tent for some reason.
Let's take a look at what happens now. Yeah, the crocodile grabs her water bottle. Mick cannot believe his luck. He's like, fucking brilliant, let me stab it in the head as quickly as possible. Cut the straps to the water bottle first. Maybe cut those straps, let it have the water bottle and let it go about its business. I'm going to stab it in the head. Fine, stab it in the head. Got to get that crocodile. Come on, follow me back to New York with the snake in the second half. fucking just like, it's just like, he's on it in a second. Stab, 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 stab. Something else to murder. That mechanical crocodile. Paul Hogan wanted to use a real crocodile for that scene, apparently, so the story goes, and was told it would be too dangerous. So they had to have that mechanical one built at a cost of $45,000. Then we meet Neville, the Aborigine, real name David Gulpill, who choreographed that traditional Aboriginal dance that's in the movie and is one of the most famous and acclaimed tribal dancers of all time in Australia. Which explains why he's not one of the most famous and acclaimed actors of all time in Australia. Then Sue and Mick get to Echo Lake. And this is where it sort of goes off a cliff. He kills a fish, which he doesn't eat. He literally spears a fish just to show her that he can spear a fish because he's a man. He spears it, chucks it out of the way. Then he kills a goanna, that massive lizard, for a joke. He kills it for a joke. He kills it, cooks it, puts it on a spit, and then goes, that's lunch. And she goes, is it? He goes, nah, not really. And that's the joke. And it's dead. Fucking brilliant. So New York, you'll be pleased that I don't have many notes. We're in New York. any drama, it was clearly created by the wildlife cast of this movie, because Mick struggles with escalators. Mick struggles with lifts. Mick says hello to people on the street because he thinks they're friendly. They're not, but then they are weirdly friendly. So it's like, that doesn't work either. He's like, oh yeah, all these people must want to live together. A lot of, very friendly place. And the next joke is him talking to a random stranger who doesn't go fuck off, like actually engages him in conversation. So that doesn't work. It's kind of all fine. I mean, it's all fine. It's all fine. The second half, it's kind of me. Paul Hogan is a very charismatic actor. And so he somehow makes this complete like black hole of drama and jeopardy work. There's one excellent joke in this entire second half, which is when he turns on the TV and he hasn't seen the TV for years. He goes, I saw one of those years ago, turns it on, and it's a rerun of I Love Lucy. And he goes, yep, that's what I saw. It's like fucking great gag. Yeah. Where are the rest of those in this movie?
It's interesting to see how many films, even films that we've covered, though, have Nick jokes from this film. So you mentioned I Love Lucy, which he's watching in Pretty Woman, but there's the confusion over tipping. which carries over into Pretty Woman. The confusion with the escalator, we saw that used in Elf. So I think it did set the template for a lot of the modern, I mean, Fish Out of Water isn't a new story, is it? So, but yeah, I saw jokes that I've seen used elsewhere, used for the first time here.
Yeah. Again, I feel jokes is too giving. Do you know what? I didn't mind it. I really didn't mind it. I just wish, like, we'll get onto it, but like Mick, basically, he just wins every situation he's in just way too quickly.
He does.
Like, he wins, he beats Knife Guy in seconds. He subdues Mr. Burns' hounds in seconds. He, like, beats up the pimp twice in seconds after, like, being roughed up ever so slightly. There's no, like, and there's no jeopardy with the romance either.
I think there are moments where it does surprise you or sort of undermine your preconceptions about what's going to happen, though. Like, for example, when he's standing on the traffic light and the policeman comes over to him and he's got his big knife, you're thinking he's going to get arrested here, but the next moment the policeman's giving him a ride home on his horse. Yeah, I agree with you. You're using his charm. His charm is the film's sort of get out of jail card, isn't it? Whatever situation he's in, his charm's going to get him out of it. If he, from, you know, potentially getting knifed to stealing to ruining someone's very large cocaine mountain.
Yeah, I don't think his charm gets him out of when he sexually assaults a trans woman, though. I'll be honest about my feelings there.
It does, though, doesn't it? Because isn't everyone laughing
in
and cheering?
Film, yeah,
that's what I'm talking about in the film. Laughing. I'm not talking about us, our reactions, in the film, everyone's laughing and cheering then.
I hate that moment, and I hate that it happens twice. But from a story point of view, I don't understand why Sue is attracted to a man who would do that. Like, what I'd forgotten about this film is that she's quite inserted into, like, New York's, not high society, well, high society because of her dad, but, like, the sort of more counterculture, alternative, like, knockoff kind of, like, factory Andy Warhol scene where she's at these, like, risque parties where someone will openly do drugs and there's, like, a good selection of fun people there. And I'd forgotten that part of her character. If that's part of her character, why does she want to be with a man who can't cope with the idea of a more fluid sexuality? He will literally grab someone's genitals to check, in inverted commas, who they are. Like, what is attractive to her about that?
Well, I mean, you know, she's clearly come from old money, so she might be at these parties, but she might not mentally, politically be engaged with that counterculture movement. Dad is old money. He's old print press money. So she's been brought up clearly in a very sheltered world, and just because she has access to those parties doesn't mean that she's in any way sort of liberal thinking.
Yeah, that's true. I think as well, the film is of its time and it's trying to say Mick Dundee is a breath of fresh air and he's cutting through all
salt
the crap.
Salt of the earth, working class man, which is the humour that the Paul Hogan sketch show used, and they've just transferred it over here. There's a certain type of person that finds that funny. Well, the whole world did it this time, but we've obviously moved on quite a bit from here.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Because, you know, it's buttoned by... He goes to the high society party when he goes to Sue's dad's house, and she's like, oh, so-and-so was on medication and, you know, was seeing a psychiatrist, and he's like, what do you need that for? You know, I tell Wally my problems and then I haven't got a problem. And he's supposed to be cutting through the fuss and the sort of hyper-individualization that New York society in that time was victim, quote marks, to. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, it's certainly, yeah. There's a lot here that hasn't dated particularly well once he gets to New York.
The thing is, though, when I was 9, I could watch That's Not a Knife, This is a Knife on repeat, killing myself laughing. And this time, I was like, that's one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
Funny.
And I still think it's funny. And I'd forgotten about it. He's like, oh, it's just kids messing about. I was rolling around. It's hilarious.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure you can find it somewhere, but there needs to be a study done of that scene and exactly what... Maybe it's something to do with the iteration, but... alliteration, but it's just like those two phrases together. That's not a knife. This is a knife. It's comic gold. It shouldn't be. It shouldn't be. There's a black magic going on there. There's some dark magic. It's very strange. Shouldn't be as funny as it is.
Yeah, I'd never seen the cocaine scene at the party before because it wasn't on there. It was only 2002 where they put it back into rentals.
That's amazing. Thank you for telling me that, Alex, because I pissed myself in that scene and I thought I hadn't seen it before. It was
you found it funny now.
Yeah, I did. I did. And it was the only time I was surprised in the film. Yeah, just the way he pours it all in that bowl.
I didn't think it was funny. It's not funny.
Him pouring it in that bowl is very funny.
It's not. Yeah.
they removed that to get a 15 certificate in the UK. That took it up to an 18. That and Sue referring to the drug as a buzz during the party scene. Anything pro-drugs was taken out. So in the second half, Richard on the phone at the start of this movie seems like a nice guy. Richard, unfortunately, cannot remain a nice guy. So for inexplicable reasons, the suggestion is that he's had a drink at one point. But throughout it, he becomes an absolute twat in the later scenes of this movie for no reason other than it makes it very easy for Sue to leave him. So here's my problem. Surely, bar a snake following Mick round New York, a more dramatic idea here would be if her boyfriend wasn't a guy who strokes her face and doesn't wait for her to answer when he's proposing, but is actually kind of decent. And it's a bit more like, oh, is she going to go for the nice, but like, you know, nice New Yorker guy or the salt of the earth guy, as opposed to a man who just like goes, will you marry me? There's the ring. Moving on.
I mean, she's caught between a rock and a hard place, really, because Richard is a dick for no reason. But Crocodile Dundee, all he ever does is punch his way out of trouble, which you would think would get boring after a while. So he punches someone in the bar in Australia, just he's so hard, punches him clean out. When Richard's getting on his nerves, it's such a weird moment in the film because you can't quite see it. But he's like, oh, look over there, punches him. So what's she to do? Like, neither of them are presenting in a classic sort of, I know it's not a rom-com, but it's got a little bit of a rom-com element, just like a very extended meet cute. Like, who is she supposed to be drawn to? Why are they so different? Like, one of them's a bit of a dick and one of them is just hard to pin down if he's unreconstructed or just ill-mannered or what.
I feel like what they're telling us is that when he saved her life a couple of times and then she saw him at one with nature, that was it, all bets were off. She's now fallen in love with this guy.
Hey, well, here's another way then to add a bit of drama. Have her father, her father basically goes, Richard's great, really happy about Richard, brilliant. Richard and you, that's a good thing. And then the next time you see him, he's dropping her off at the hotel and going, you go get that Mick. Mick's the guy for you. Yeah. Whatever you say, darling. It's like, have him be like, I'm going to cut you out of the fortune. Yeah, you can't work at the paper if you want to be with Mick. Throw in a bit of jeopardy as opposed to this dad who goes, Richard, you don't like Richard? Mick? Great, Mick. Mick, Mick, Mick. Fine, 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 fine.
He's just a supportive dad, agree. Alex. Nice.
This is a fucking movie though, like it doesn't matter, he can be like, you need someone to be the villain, like, or just anyway, the tube scene at the end, that is fun. I remember at the time thinking this is really good, entirely unrealistic obviously. You're like, I'm just gonna walk over you. You don't know, you're fucking not. Get off my head. But it's a fantastical rom-com end, lovely stuff. And I think the guys who were cast as the two men passing the message back and forward is some of the most perfect casting I've ever seen in a movie.
I've got that written down, Alex. I've wrote exactly that down. They're both brilliant, aren't they?
So, so good. So good. Just right. Just like, I think that bit is great. And then the film literally, like, if it goes from being a sort of movie to an art house project, it's sort of just like Finn may as well just appear on screen. You're sort of like, well, that's it. They just they hug and then Finn. Like, it's like, we're going to give it a really sort of odd ending.
Because they didn't know they were going to get... Yeah, they can't have known they were going to get a sequel. So why would you not... It's good to set up a sequel like that, but they didn't know that was going to happen. It's only like a $7 million film. I know he thought it was going to be massive, but there must have been someone being like, but just in case we don't get a sequel, shall we put a little clue in there about what their life will be like? Like, are they going to go on this walkabout together or live in New York or go back to Australia? Like, it can't just end.
Yeah.
But it does. That's what you have to accept. It does.
Yeah.
Just then. But like you say, two sequels, Crocodile Dundee 2 in 1988, which also did very well, not as well as this, but did well. I've seen it, and I recall enjoying it a lot more because I think there's a little more action in it, a little more fighting, which seems strange because like, Paul Hogan had a bit of a problem when people saw this movie, this first movie, they sort of, and you mentioned him punching his way out of situations. A lot of people compared him to sort of like Rambo and Chuck Norris sort of, and he didn't like that. He's like, that's not Mick's style. He's, you know, he's a nice guy, you know, one with nature, unless you're a reptile. So he had a bit of a problem with that. The sequel, I remember being kind of punchy all the way through. Crocodile Dundee in LA. Either of you seen it? Never bothered.
No. I don't think so.
No. Even he's embarrassed by that one.
Well, he's outdone himself because there's a film that came out last year called The Very Excellent Mr. Dundee. Which is a kind of meta film where he sort of has to tell people that he's not really Crocodile Dundee because he saw his life is so entwined with that character. It has 16% on Rotten Tomatoes. I watched the trailer. I am going to watch it. I haven't seen. I can't. I don't know if it's available in the UK, but it looks so bad. It's brilliant. It might be something we even have to do on the podcast on one of my weeks. The Very Excellent Mr. Dundee. Listen to the cast. It's got Paul Hogan, Chevy Chase, John Cleese and Olivia Newton-John in it. Come on.
Lovely.
Come on. Is that not the weirdest cast of people who you sort of go, have they all lost a lot of money at something? Do they really? More interestingly, there was a fake trailer for a film called Dundee that came out in 2018 with Danny McBride playing his son, like Mick Dundee's son. You watch the trailers. Mm. They're so funny. And it kind of almost, I mean, I do love Danny McBride. So anything he touches, I think is funny. But it broke my heart to find out that they were revealed during the Super Bowl to be more Australian tourism ads. And it wasn't a real movie.
Yeah, they've got Chris Hemsworth, haven't like, they? And I think Hugh Jackman plays the Prime Minister. They're brilliantly done.
Really good. So good that people are now campaigning for them to be turned into an actual movie. And before we get onto the bits, there was once considered a Beverly Hills Cop Crocodile Dundee crossover. Why did that not happen? Why? What is wrong with you, Hollywood? After like the sequels to both those series, the third movie was going to be a crossover in the early 90s.
So what would that have been? Would that have been Axel Foley in the Northern Territory?
I think it was going to. That would have been interesting. I think it was going to be Mick Dundee in New York. I don't know. Actually, do you know what? I don't even think it got that far because Eddie Murphy was the one who went, absolutely fucking not. and then made Beverly Hills Cop 3. So bad decision. Right. The bits then. Best scene. Chris.
It's clearly because I hadn't seen it before, but I really found it funny when he asked the bloke, what's up, pal? Got a blocked nose and then ruined his cocaine. Pours hot water in his cocaine and says 10 minutes of that and you'll be clear as a bell. I found that really funny, but that maybe is because it was the only joke I hadn't seen 100 times before.
That guy needs his cocaine pouring away though, because at that point he doesn't sort of go, no, that's not how you take cocaine. I know, because I've done it before. He is a first timer who has too much cocaine there. He might have done himself a harm. So it's good that because he puts a fucking towel over his head and goes, cheers, thank you. This must be exactly how you take it. What's your best scene, Victoria?
The subway scene, because I think because it's a really clever multi-layered scene. So if you, it's great anyway, just because it's a nice sort of emotional lift. But if you're from New York and you've been watching this film, I think you need that because through the eyes of this outsider, your city is supposed to be alien and hostile. So you can say that the film is saying that Crocodile Dundee has had this effect on the people of New York, that they're open to the chain of communication and to be emotional. But also maybe New Yorkers aren't as hostile as this film might be suggesting they are. So that's why it works on those two levels. And I think for that, it's really clever.
I wrote subway scene and I'll borrow your reason.
That yes. reason. Subway scene. I'll agree, that
well,
reason.
I'll agree as well because it made me really emotional. Was anyone else welling up watching it this time?
Yeah. I will admit to that. Yeah. A bit of magic it's really there. Powerful.
A bit of magic.
Yeah.
Weird, isn't it? There is something going on with this movie because, like, I stand by a lot of the reasons that I've outlined why it is not a good film. And the second half barely constitutes a film at all. But it's really good. Yeah. It's like, not really good. It's like, it gets you. Like, he's a leathery, wonderfully charming man who I forgave for all his, like, snake killing. Right. MVW, Victoria.
So it's not Paul Hogan, because I think the trouble is, when I was younger watching this, I was obviously far too young to think about him in any sort of romantic way. And even though him and Linda, what's her surname?
Kozlowski.
They even though they got together, that blows my head off because I just don't see this chemistry like at all. So it's not either of them. And this answer isn't meant to be facetious, but it's good because we did touch on it. But it's the actual like Walkabout Creek or whatever that national park was called, because this is the first time I ever really noticed it. When I was watching it when I was younger, I was like, yeah, Australia, whatever. But this time I was like, it looks amazing. Like, it looks genuinely enticing. And I say that as someone who's terrified of all spiders and snakes, not great with buffalo, whatever that thing is. So it made me want to go there for the first time ever in a really like visceral way. I mean, it could be lockdown. I will go anywhere, but I really want to go to Walkabout Creek.
I'll just jump in here because I have the same answer as Victoria, but you don't mean Walkabout Creek, which is that dusty shithole of an outback town. I mean, I know there was a bar there, V, but what you mean, it's so fucking awful outside, I can justifiably stay in the bar the whole time. Kakadu National Park.
That's it, if you can take drinks, yeah. If not, it's Walkabout Creek. So I did say that first time. So yeah.
You're not going to be bent down by a watering hole filling a water bottle. You've got, there's no threat. There's
not just in like, half a swimming costume. No, I'm fucking not.
Chris, what's your MVW?
I'm going to say a guy called John Cornell, who sort of learning more and more about hoags. This guy was probably the most important person in his life. He produced and co-wrote Crocodile Dundee. He was his co-star on TV. He was very much his partner in crime. And he's the unsung hero of this story. You know, it was just as much his story as Paul Hogan's. He was the one that went to the studios in the States and played hardball because he knew what they had, and they ended up making a lot of money off the back of it. And so, yeah, Paul Hogan's the face of this story, but John Cornell was the guy behind the scenes. So I think we should celebrate him as well.
We should. And indeed, both of them were accused of tax fraud in Australia. So they've got that together as well for siphoning off a lot of millions and putting in offshore accounts. Allegedly, they were let off in the end. Not let off. That's the same as being... Let me just get my wording right. Let me get my legal wording right. They were all dropped. No one had to admit fault. So it was all dropped. Allegedly, everything I just said allegedly. Right then. I think we're covered. Chris, what would you change?
Well, we sort of touched on this. No one changes during Crocodile Dundee, which makes for a lack of drama. Maybe have Mick learn something over the course of the film. Although, again, maybe the point is he doesn't change, and that's what we like about him. But as you say, Alex, that lack of jeopardy is a bit of a problem in the second half of the film. I think they need to even their relationship up. So Mick saves her in the outback. I think she should do something to save him in the big city, but we never really get... He's continuing to rescue her in the big city. So I think that's the switch they need to make.
Point. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one, Chris. Vicky, what's yours?
Quite straightforward. It needs a makeover scene. Even if Hogue's Crocodile Dundee goes back to his attire, it's crying out for one scene where he tries to look like a New Yorker.
Writes itself, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Yeah. I like that one. I actually like that one. I've covered mine already. And you said it as well, Chris. It just needs some drama in the second half. Dad needs to be the bad guy. Richard needs to be a nice guy. One of those two. One of the other men in her life trying to exert some influence over her through being nice or being evil, like Dad being evil. Just a bit of drama. All right. That is Crocodile Dundee finished. I think we've got time for a quiz, Chris.
Sure, very simple one this week. It's the Fish Out of Water quiz. I'll give you the Fish Out of Water premise. You give me the Fish Out of Water film. Ready?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
A spoiled heiress screws over a carpenter. When she gets amnesia, the carpenter gets his own back by making her think she's poor.
Overboard, overboard, overboard. I'm saying overboard.
Correct. Alex is correct. Is that... Mentioned only recently on this very show.
Number two. That movie.
A wealthy but sheltered woman gets more than she bargained for when she signs up for the US Army on a whim.
G. Joe. Oh, what is it called?
Not G.I. Jane.
No.
It's not, no.
No.
It's got a strong connection to the last film I just mentioned. We just did.
I can't remember what it's called. Goldie Hawn plays the lead,
oh,
but
yeah,
I don't.
I think fuck's sake! I can see it.
Yeah, she's like saluting on the cover, wearing an oversized helmet.
I'll give you the first word if you give me this. You give me the second. So it's
yeah. Go on.
It's Private
Benjamin.
Alex got it. Well done. By the way, they're not all Goldie Hawn films; just the first two. Okay, number three. An inexperienced New York lawyer takes on a case in rural Alabama.
A Time to Kill.
The thing that I like.
You do.
A Time to Kill.
No, that's incorrect. It's a good film.
It's my film.
If this clue helps, I saw it with my folks when we were in the States on holiday once in the cinema.
Yeah, it's the thing, The Devil's Advocate.
No.
That's the other way around.
It's a comedy. Oh. An inexperienced New York lawyer.
Oh, My Cousin Vinny.
Correct.
Oh, wow.
Okay. A magical Tibetan skull causes a father and son to swap bodies.
Oh.
Vice versa?
Correct. Alex, you are absolutely killing this.
I've never heard of that.
It's Judge Reinhold. It's quite good.
It's Fred Savage. That's it. Okay. To protect a little boy, a Philadelphia policeman lives with the Amish community.
Oh, the thing with Tim Robbins in.
Witness.
Correct. It's Witness.
It.
The film
without
Tim Robbins in. It's that film.
It's that one.
5 for 5 for Alex so far. Is it going to be a clean sweep?
All right, Chris. You fucking back the fuck up a second. Right.
Just get one right, please. A young maiden from a fairy tale land is sent to New York by an evil
Enchanted.
Queen. Correct.
Fuck you.
Lovely. Charming. Lovely. An overachieving big city cop is sent to a small town with a dark secret.
Hot Fuzz.
Correct.
Oh, as if.
What do you mean, as if? That's the answer. There's no as if.
And last one. After he's laid off, a husband switches roles with his wife, becoming a stay-at-home dad with hilarious results.
I don't know.
There's more than one of them.
It's an old one. It's very old. Michael Keaton.
Mr. Mom.
Alex wins 7-1, but I'll ask you the tiebreaker because I think it's a bit different this week. My question what is special about the mangrove rivulus?
Oh, it's the fish don't live in water. They live on the shore.
Yes, it's a fish that can survive out of water. Well done, Vicky.
Very good. Very good. I feel embarrassed now that you actually got a question about the natural world and I got Mr. Mom. So speaks volumes. Right then, let's look ahead very quickly. Before we talk about Thursday, let's look ahead to next week's pairing. And I believe it is my choice. I hope so, because I have a clue. It is my choice, is it not?
Yes, go for it, Alex.
Good, good. Here is your clue for next week's films. I've been doing... let me just get this. This is spectacular disaster movie action.
Bloody hell.
That was really
good.
Can you just do it one more time
for posterity?
Yeah. And fuck off. Here we go. This is spectacular disaster movie action.
You have gone above and beyond there. You didn't have to do it. It's so good.
Loathing, self-loathing. Right, before we get on to what those two movies clearly are, we're back on Thursday. We're talking Coming to America. That is going to be a lot of fun. Chris is guiding us through that. In the meantime, please subscribe to us. Rate and indeed review us if you have the time. It's a great help. And check in with us on Twitter and Instagram at ClashPod. Speak to you Thursday.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.